We have the MAC 1011.
I'll shoot the MAC 10.
We have the AK-47S.
I'll shoot the MAC 10.
We have a 12-gauge skeet shotgun.
I'll shoot the MAC 10.
You make it look easy.
You will engage 10 targets alternately, close to far, in 90 seconds. You have 30 seconds to load and make ready. Stand by.
All right, Orlando, welcome to another edition of Punkonomics with Dr. Benjamin Balick. Oh, Corey might be showing up too, right?
No, well, that'd be a surprise, actually.
Okay,
no,
well.
I think he's working. Jose should be showing up.
Oh, Jose Garvez and myself, Jesse Velez, and hopefully Shaheen might even show up. You never know. You never know.
Generally, yeah, it's happened before. That's kind of nice, you know, in somebody, especially given that it's a campus radio show. Of course, it is spring break, so.
That's right. You know, it doesn't seem like it's spring break to me for some reason.
No.
I don't know.
You know, catch up time a little bit.
Working adults, I guess, right?
Right. That's it, right. I mean, the parking lot isn't empty, you know, so.
Yeah, which is kind of weird because I think I mentioned earlier, we were talking about before we got on the air about the trumpeteers out there.
Oh, yeah, which I didn't see because I come through the, you know, back entrance. Right. No, I didn't see, but right, because it's coming up. And, well, all right, I know so little about it in some sense. You know, I do think maybe sometimes it's helpful I just banged my reading glasses on the microphone, to not necessarily be taken by the details, especially when you have such a really, what's the word, ridiculously complex? I mean, out of date, and Americans know this, right?
The question is
what to do exactly about it. And maybe people do have different views about it, actually. Corey did send an interesting article that I reposted on punkonomics.org. An NPR, I think it's npr.org or something. So,
okay.
Yeah, our tax money sometimes doing good things. Though again, that's another story. But yeah, quick analysis. To cut to the chase, what was interesting about it, the only thing interesting out of the whole Super Tuesday thing, and this is all weird, is another foreigner, that's Jose coming in here.
Yeah,
another foreigner, so to us, again, a bit of an alien view of this, right? It's very difficult to follow. It's extremely complicated in ways that seem like out of another era, where in fact we find that they are indeed off the 18th century. So no surprise if it sounds unfamiliar. So a lot of the things we complain about the elections, and again, a lot of Americans are complaining, justifiably. It's really the archaic nature of the system. How could a system survive so long and not be either fail or corrupt or anything like that? Yeah, but the result that is interesting from that little article is that Republicans potentially show themselves as a majority wanting the outsider,
right,
as opposed to, you know, the well-established or experienced voice, insider.
But,
and Democrats, and this is where it's a little bit kind of funny in a sad sort of way, don't have the dynamism, right?
I mean,
so as Clint,
actually,
what's driving, it's not just this insane super delegate concept. I mean, in Super Tuesdays, I mean, call me a crazy, you know, immigrant, but by all means, do that.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be accurate. But it's really kind of sounds insane, right? But also, opinion polls show that registered Democrats, and there's a bias in the, right
the
there,
polls, of course. Yeah.
There's a lot of people. Anyway. So, you know, the left is not being represented properly and things like that. But that still, they have a solid majority wanting experience.
Right.
If indeed these are accurately done, and the wording has to almost be on purpose manipulative in surveys. It has to manipulate people into answering exactly like you want them to answer. Mm-hmm. You know, purely, right? But it's hard. It's an art.
I also think that the Republicans made a really bad choice, and I think they're beating themselves to death right now. And the problem basically is, it's not that they had all these candidates, you know, that were some of them, most of them were kind of crazy. But the fact is that early on, they gave Trump a hard time. Mm-hmm. Had they allowed him to go independent, they wouldn't have not had this problem. But see, now it's kind of like, well, it's too late, and they're having to swallow it, you know, because he basically is the Republican Party, but without the PC image, plain and simple, and the PC talk.
Well, right. I mean, they're torn at all. Yeah, again,
And I don't want to generalize that way because I have a lot of Republican friends out there who are just really good Americans, you know, good, you know, people that totally see the circus behind what's going on right now.
It's a more diverse and dynamic group today, maybe because they've been the underdog in a sense, right?
True,
so maybe
true.
It brought out the worst and the best. And I don't know, you know, I mean, like I said, if anything, we should look and I think Democrats should kind of scratch their heads a little bit and look at their party and see just how ossified, I believe, is the correct
right. I don't know, it's more like rotten to the core. I mean, I'm really ashamed of the party right now. I mean, it's always been kind of spineless. I mean, I've always wanted a more reactive kind of party, but that's just me, you know.
Maybe
it's a
hard
climb. Sense, you know what I mean? But for people out there who are married and they got kids, it's, you know, I can see where you want to be a little bit more conservative with your, you know, train of thought and with your decisions when it comes to voting and all that, and the people who are governing you. You know, I can see it. Problem is, it doesn't move, you know, completely in a lateral kind of way or in a progressive kind of way, where most of us are just staying behind. You know,
no, I mean, you can't, it's a hard sell anyway. You know, I mean, when left, if it's not revolutionary, right? When does the left get a seat at the table with the kings and dukes and duchesses and captains of industry? I'm using like old fashioned language, but come on, you know, I mean, the elites, it's always, there is an elite. It's driven by different things, military sometimes, you know, economic of different kinds in other industry, finance. Now finance rules a little bit supreme, basically, in the world. And it's not the first time it did that either, by the way. But it has consequence on how things happen. But again, to get invited to that table, you know, you're not going to be requesting an abolition of the way things are because the people in power like the way
things are.
They're
definitely not going to give you a menu at that dinner table, that's for sure.
Right, right. So you have this kind of moderate, right, democratic left emerges, and part of it is, you know, fights the fight according to their vision, right? But once it really gets power and is allowed, in order for it to be allowed literally to literally govern, it already has to, you know, unless it goes revolutionary, has to compromise a lot with the way things are. The people who have power, pre-existing power, right? They're not going to be taxing the rich vehemently. Also, because it's counterproductive, by the way,
right.
Because they will escape or they will, you know, there will be chaos. So, you know, it's a balancing act, as often is the case, especially when it comes to trying to get some kind of market system / capitalism working. A balancing act. But again, so of course it doesn't necessarily require that they sell out completely, like Blair and Clinton. I'm talking now about Bill Clinton did.
Sense that like, hello,
yep.
In the sense that like, do you have already like what people out there are calling the establishment, right?
Right.
The problem I see with at least the pollings and the results right now is basically that the Democrats are still playing their establishment card.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, will that establishment card be enough to be able to debunk where Donald Trump is coming from?
Because I predict, I mean, again,
because
and I have no
Donald
skin
Trump,
in the game.
Imagine
Trump will tronch Clinton.
Basically,
Trump will destroy Clinton.
All he has to say is she's part of the establishment.
Yeah, pretty much.
So basically you're signing up for 8 more years of exactly the same deal.
And he will naturally move to the center. Wait up, guys. He will also, if he's the candidate, if it's Trump-Clinton, right?
Mm-hmm.
Immediately they have to. That's how you dance the dance, right? He will become way moderate all of a sudden, right? And she will have to abandon whatever silly claims of being a progressive she tries to, you know, sell,
right? It's going to normalize.
So, right. They will,
the mean.
Precisely. So given that situation, what is she going to get? I mean, she'll need to rally like crazy. She'll be in an extremely impossible bind if we're going to continue just for a few more minutes the kind of horse race like all the media does, right? Of who's going to win, despite the fact that above all it doesn't matter. So she will find herself in it. He will have all the advantage strategically. She will find herself in a bind where if she has to move to the center to keep her establishment credential and momentum, and maybe she will try and get a hell of a lot of money, make more than him, significantly outspend him by being the Wall Street gal, if you will.
Right.
And, especially if he doesn't become a complete Wall Street boy right away, which he probably won't because it doesn't make sense for him, right?
Mm-hmm.
But wait, but she will need, in order to win against him, her only hope would be to really rile up the black voters, Latino voters, who are not that foolish.
He'll probably just sell all his assets and, then after he loses, he'll just go bankrupt, you know.
No, he wants to be president. I really think personally, and I'm not qualified, this is a pure opinion, right? I think the prime thing that motivates him, like most people, there is the blind ambition. You have to probably have it to succeed in this business.
Right.
You know? The idea, again, of democracy is the opposite of reasonable, good leaders with experience that would lead us well. This is anti-democratic. This is anti-America. This is, like, insane to me as a foreigner that this is even flies. On the contrary, we have to keep them accountable. We don't trust on the master being good. That was the reason for civil rights movement, and we can go back in the past all the way through. Every kind of movement towards freedom is when we're not happy with just a kind master. It's not good enough.
Yeah, I personally think that it's all ego and not ambition. Mm-hmm. I think that Trump has had up and down history with the government. You know, and particularly with the IRS, he gets audited every single year. So he's constantly on guard. And, you know, obviously his ego has taken over and he figures, well, why not? You know, if I can't fight with these guys, I might as well own them, which is usually the motto that most corporations have.
I think that's actually it. And you got to start questioning, like, is Donald Trump actually a person? Well, obviously he's a human being, obviously, but like, but he's almost also like a corporate image.
Right.
Right? Like he's a coin, like basically it's like a character that represents corporations.
Right.
From anybody's perspective, right? Like nobody's...
No, he's
really
more independent than most, but given his personal wealth, he is more independent than most.
But still, I mean, like think of yourself as a legal person, as a corporation, right? Like let's go through that mental experiment of thinking of yourself. Who would you pick to be your politician? I would pick Donald Trump, right? It makes sense. If I am a corporation and I think as a corporation, I am going to pick the guy who is a successful business leader, has like some media, has excellent PR.
Appears to be predictable.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm not sure about, he's a little bit dangerous potentially. So again, maybe it's all bluster, right? And he's going to completely turncoat and betray his angry white voters. He might do that. I don't know, maybe.
Well, I mean, you know, in the jungle, you got to be the loudest one, you know.
No, yeah. But he's making distinctly different noises. That's why he's winning.
Yeah.
Despite being such an outsider.
Well,
and
but
not,
here's the deal. I think that George Carlin has a joke that goes something along the lines of like, hey, America can tolerate a hater. Okay. They can tolerate a sexist, misogynist, racist. What they don't tolerate is someone who lies. And what is Trump banking on? This idea that he's running based on he's not corrupt, he's not like the rest of establishment politicians, and thus he's trustable, and thus, if you think about it, everything else gets forgiven.
And he's relatively...
Because he's relatively being the honest ones of the alternatives you've got.
Right.
You know, the other alternative was Bernie Sanders, but like people associate Hillary Clinton already with, hey, she's backed by a bunch of interests
and that's the biggest,
been boiling for...
That's the biggest mistake that the American public is making is right away assuming that she's going to be the, candidate.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, when a lot of people, in particular the ones that don't go out and vote, but, vote if it's, like, really crucial. The moment they start hearing that Hillary Clinton is the de facto, nominee for the... Democratic Party, they're going to sit at home and not vote, even if they have.
That's a good point,
chance.
Right?
And that's what I'm saying is to declare that already, or to start believing that, it's already just giving it to her. You know, Bernie Sanders doesn't have a chance.
Be careful. Establishment is not a cabal only. I mean, maybe it includes, but it's not a cabal of extremely powerful, extremely wealthy people behind the scene whose names are not well known.
It's not
funding
a conspiracy,
our candidate.
Right?
There is that. There is. I mean, there's funding candidate, and most of them are funding pretty wide also, so that basically they're covered either way.
Right, like a casino.
Those people should be somewhat worried. Certainly, we think, of course, they're worried about Bernie Sanders. But I think they're just as worried about Donald Trump, who actually has the credential. And again, I'm giving him absolutely no support. All I'm saying is that the others are just as vile as he is. I just want to be clear here because I'm notoriously something. I try to be super fair, you know what I'm saying? I try to really like kind of put myself in the intellectual shoes of the other side as much as possible. Yeah. And then sometimes I forget that people think that I'm... Don't realize I'm role playing.
Yeah, hey, by the way, I don't endorse anybody out there, people. Yeah. I'm not endorsing anybody. I'm just going through hypothetically think about.
It's almost like walking through a diverse minefield, you know.
It's tricky because people
one can
think
be worse
like,
than
hey,
the other.
You're supportive of Trump or you're supportive of Clinton or you're not taking into account Sanders and well, it's kind of like, hey, no, I don't. As a matter of fact, I don't vote in this country.
That's it. I'm going to be for the first time. Of course, I don't have a chance. I refuse to register to a party, so I don't get a chance to vote in the primaries. But I will, I suppose. Might be funny.
Okay, so I have a question. I don't know if you did this on purpose, but when you were referring to Donald Trump before, you referred to him as Donald Trump. And I'm wondering if we're actually doing that. It was a suggestion somebody made to me off the show
that we should
bring the Trump back with the joke from John Oliver where his family changed his name to Trump. But before that, he was Donald Trump.
Trump.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's quite funny because he was making fun of John Stewart for having changed his name, right? So... basically, they got back at him so I don't know. Before I heard you say, "Hey, Donald Trump," and
well,
I'm
you
like,
know,
hey,
I've,
this
I've
is thinking,
many times
eh?
said, by all means, look, making fun of politicians is a good thing, so long as we realize that this is a it's pure comedy.
Right.
It's
satire,
very nice.
Right?
Because the real problem is, of course, that the games, the rituals, including the elections and the primaries and the analysis thereof, and what we were doing right now for a while, are all. I can't say this in the clean air,
Then again, we can go down the conspiracy line and wonder why all this is happening. Like, I mean, we've never seen an election like this.
Ah, I know. I know exactly what's happening. I figured it out.
Got it, man.
I got it. Figured it out.
All right, let's hear it.
I've said it a couple of times. I don't want to be like, show off or anything too bad, but, I've said it a couple of times and like 20 years later, people are going like, damn. God, I thought he was insane that he was so right. Seriously, listen, we live in, it's going to be a bit of a, you help me out here, right?
Okay.
We're going to make it an ultra short a lecture. Both. Certainly, Bernie Sanders won already. All of the stuff we're talking about sounds kind of pretty morose and scary. On the contrary, it's wonderful. I haven't been so optimistic about the United States and the world in a long time, frankly. And the last time I was, it's because I was naive, too naive at the time to realize just how deep the rabbit hole goes, right? So finally the impossible happened. American public is moving again. We haven't seen that. Maybe the 60s. Yeah, 60s deserve credit there. Certainly not since then. Of course, the challenges now are much bigger. Much bigger, because the 60s was an issue of taking a kind of a relatively democratic, expanding system and pushing it towards being a little bit better, with certain aspects of society. It wasn't, a dramatic change. It was a dramatic change in a specific aspect, but not altogether. Listen, we live in a postmodern era. What the hell does that mean? There are libraries could be written about it. Entire courses of study could be given about it. The short of it, right? The blinds are blurred. Two things, really. The blinds are blurred between fiction and fact, right? That's a common way of understanding this. a funny way of saying it is that we don't know if we behave the way we do, or take one removed, our kids behave the way we do, or our friends the way they do, because they've seen people behave like that on television, right? On the internet, or YouTube, or is it because, you know, or is it actually that the media is representing people the way they are? It's not an easy answer anymore, is it? So there's one. But even more importantly is the questioning of foundations, right? So foundations can be arcane philosophical, you know, presuppositions and logical presuppositions, different kinds, et cetera, et cetera. Never mind all that. How about ideology, right? We all have a certain slant, right? A certain way of looking at the world. Right. So and we kind of believe that it's fundamentally true. You know, every reasonable person would knows this. Right. Well, postmodernism effectively showed that that just doesn't really carry water. That is a fake hope. Right. We should actually realize that we can still believe in things, but they're a bit castles in the air. There's no solid logical foundation for why. We all have our biases, have our presuppositions, and all that.
An easy way of putting it is kind of like everybody's got like a narrative of how they explain themselves, but it is, after all, a narrative.
Yeah, it's
it
one of the better not, ways of explaining behavior, right? By the way. One of the better ways of explaining behavior, and yet untapped significantly, the whole narrative. Philosophers have been dealing with it, but nobody has yet been sophisticated enough to apply
economics
it
could use a great deal of that.
This in a nutshell, by the way, is the idea that why do you make decisions? Because you kind of imagine you're basically, and today's kids will get it like that. You know, something it took me years to wrap my head around. I'm writing the epic poem of my life, basically. That's why I decide, you know, why do I do the right thing even when nobody's looking at me sometimes, at least?
Right, right.
Because I'm writing my epic poem. And I don't want to see where I'm like sneaking. It doesn't fit my character, right? What I want to be the epic poem about my life, right? Which is the meaning for my life, etc. So anyway, reel back. So what is all this uncertainty, foundations of different kinds of beliefs being shaken, calling to question all of these kind of things, not even being sure what's reality and what's our imagination to some extent anymore? Rhetoric matters more than before, right? We're going back a little bit in some sense to ancient times too. But right, there's no proof. Persuasion matters, rhetoric matters, the language matters, stuff like that, right? So this kind of insight is looked at generally as you know, kind of academic, maybe philosophical, not that practical. Now, I think the marketing department know very, they were quietly, or they were like, yeah, we know it's important, you know, of course they did. And politicians, and certainly the people that market them, etc. So when you're talking about so many Democrats, and apparently like 82%, if I saw the last Pew opinion research, prefer experience, and thus Hillary Clinton, never mind which experience, yes? How do you create such an empty concept, right? A sort of meaningless concept, yet it sways so many intelligent people, right? I mean, language matters. Things get crazy. Here's the happy bit, right? I promised happy bit. Here's the very happy bit. Remember the Occupy movement? Why is the election different than it's been a long time since there wasn't such an election like this, right? Clearly. If nothing else, the Americans want outsiders, right?
Right.
The Democrats seem to be able to discipline their people a little bit better for now than the Republicans. We talked about it, whatever. But clearly the American people are speaking, right? And loudly, right? Well, it's the Occupy movement. They changed the rhetoric. We said it on this show, and many others have said it. It's not our invention, right?
Or the Tea Party.
They did. The Tea Party got co-opted pretty quickly.
That's true.
Though, right. So they didn't.
And their major candidates never got traction.
Right.
The scary part.
They introduced the lobbyist interest discussion a little bit, but it never really stuck. But the 1%, 99%. Consider how a few serious people, you know, doing silly stuff, frankly, and everybody was making fun of them almost as much as Trump, right? About how, oh, look at you with your annoying, like, people yelling and people yelling back, and or no structure, and silly hippies with their tom-toms and such, and drum circles and things. They had more effect. Certainly, if you want to look at it with the left, you know, the left never survived the world wars, basically, in America. It was extinguished, you know, to linger a little bit like in oblivion, and then eventually the new left was this kind of diet Republican, basically, you know, fakey smiley Republican or whatever. I mean, right. Silly, but it works, right? So they competed. The whole notion of Tony Blair in Britain and Bill Clinton in America with a very dynamic right that's coming from the, you know, amazing victories of Maggie Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, and again in terms of their parties, the right wing, the conservatives, as well as in terms of the upper, the richer parts of society, the richer people in society, because not that they care who, but basically, you know, Clinton promised, "I'll cut your taxes also, don't worry." Right. In a sense, I'll do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So anyway, having said all that, check it out. This little, most people when asked, oh, what about Occupy? Oh, it didn't do anything. It didn't work. Excuse me? It did more than all yes, the no, left I, together I, for since, I don't, since the 40s.
I agree. What I do see, and it kind of troubles me, is that, on the good side, yeah, the narrative has changed quite a bit. Problem that I see is that, the very same people who have pushed for the change of narrative and addressing certain issues don't seem to be aware what they're getting into. In other words, it's kind of like just because one person comes out and says, "I'm Superman," doesn't mean that he's got all the powers needed to save the world. And
yeah, Trump is feeding off of a very, very, that's the problem with Trump.
Right.
I would have been very, I would have been, I don't know, you know, I would have been a Trump supporter if he didn't tap the, you know,
right,
the racism, xenophobia, you know, at a very intimate level. But again, you know, even when he does the really obscene stuff, like him and his family, you know, racial superior, I mean, not racial, genetic superiority shtick that they have there. So everybody's kind of rolling their eyes. Oh my God. But I put to you, excuse me? Do you know somebody who doesn't believe
right,
this?
Right.
You know? I mean,
I think it's quite. I think it's quite wonderful in two ways.
Well,
I mean, like if you're emotionally detached from it,
yeah,
right? If you're emotionally detached from it, uh-huh, for the first thing you notice is the more he insults, the more people talk about him. And at this yeah, point in the race,
oh, totally,
that is what any clever politician
sure,
would want to have,
mm-hmm,
to be covered 24/7. That's pretty much it.
You know.
And the second thing is creepy, I think, is how is it that he's touching these subjects? Because it seems almost that he doesn't believe in the stuff that comes out of his mind. He just says it because he knows it's just basically unveiling all of the things that for years and years have been there. You know what I mean? Like, everybody knows yeah, that there is a section of the population who believes mm-hmm, a lot of the things he says, who thinks that way.
Right.
But that they have been, basically, I really like the verb unveil,
mm-hmm,
you know, because mm-hmm, it basically takes the veil away from that and shows you the raw face
mm-hmm,
of hey,
right,
this is where this type of politics is coming from.
Right.
And I personally, without agreeing with it, I like that. I think it makes it a better yeah, identification yeah, strategy.
Oh, exactly.
Actually.
You know where the bullet's mm-hmm, coming from.
Yeah.
You know?
I know exactly who is. I mean, I don't like its mm-hmm, hatefulness. I don't like. But I also think in matters of, I rather have that. Like you say all the time, one of your Bennisms, Benny, it pumps the pimple.
We're
going
to have to market
I mean?
That.
You know what I'm saying? It shows the raw stuff right mm-hmm, out there. And for me, that is a more honest dialogue. You know what
yeah,
I'm saying? In
right,
the sense of exactly what are we dealing with rather than kind of cover it on top of PC and say it doesn't exist and keep on pretending it doesn't
right,
exist.
Which is the real catastrophe because really exactly, honestly, I mean, even
right,
teaching, right? When I start to try to prod, you know, students, especially, you know, students of at least relative and above privilege, because they're sitting in a nice college and already, yeah. It's, you know, you're told the opposite all your life. I mean, you have these platitudes of, oh, we're all born equal, you know, but hey, remember how many generations, it took when that was our founding words of this nation. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, there was, you know, an epic Holocaust, going on, right? Nobody's perfect, right? That's the nature of the beast.
Nobody's perfect.
No, seriously, yeah. I mean, you know, that's one of the recognitions that have to be accepted, by the way. That's
yeah,
one of the funky things. You know, I tell even in pop art, sometimes you can find this. I mean, I know you love this stuff too. You know, comedy and action films and things that are entertaining, but at the same time highly instructive, like, you know, stand-up comedies and news shows like that, and different things, movies, B-movies, etc. Recently, Iron Sky, that everybody considered to be, well, it's kind of really, you know, silly and, you know, steampunk Nazis on the dark side of the moon, you know, no spoilers. Very funny and everything, but what does it mean at the end? I mean, what is the significance of the film? Is a recognition of the fact that we all have we're all a little bit Nazis.
Yeah.
All of us.
Yeah.
Americans, Jews, even blacks, you know. Yeah. We all have the, it's in us. And when we have the opportunity, it comes out too readily. If we are to balk that tendency, you know, we have to understand it first. We have to acknowledge it first. We're always feeling like, oh, whatever we do, we're justified. We're good. We're the good guys. Then you're already... Before you got there, you have already actually are the bad guy.
Yeah.
Ancient Greek audience would get it right away, you know, but yeah. I'm not sure if today we get it right away.
Well, but I do have, like, if you think about it,
That's why you need to learn the classics, even in the 21st century. And I'm an uber geek, people. I don't know about being able to write, frankly. I'm cool with, like, dictating. I'm cool with losing that. But I'm not losing my classics.
The classics. The horror.
You know what I mean? I need them, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, right. Well, you were abused by a priest.
Oh my God!
No, I didn't mean it. Oh, sorry.
No.
Oops.
No. That didn't happen.
I didn't mean it like that. I really didn't.
Okay.
He was well educated, you know, by a priest. You know?
That can be like la mala educación. That's so terrible, man.
No, I figured you were forced to maybe learn more classics than an American liberal education forced me.
I mean, like, I did have a lot of, like, philosophy and religion background.
In Latin?
Theology and stuff like that. No, it's just like...
No Latin?
No Latin.
Wow.
No Latin. We already have Spanish. So
right, you don't need it that much. Yeah. That's true. Because there is an argument, actually. I would call a colleague of mine. She was on the show back in the old days. Hey, Jackie, if you happen to be listening. We'll have her back. She's starting an exciting new school. Yeah, we totally will have her back. Very interesting. But she's a big believer in teaching kids, like elementary school kids, Latin. I mean, as foundations for most of the languages that we use. Just fun. I mean, no exams and horrible, you know. And just have a little knowledge of Latin. It'll serve you for most of the important languages that you're going to have to deal with in the
modern
world.
That's true. I mean, like, all the other five, the romantic five, right? Yeah.
And English, English again, the real challenge that a lot of native speakers don't realize
is
that it's the most messed up hodgepodge language, which is, I think, a major part of its beauty.
Yeah.
But there's no grammar. There's no rules. It's right. You know that. I mean, it's you have to read a lot, so you kind of internalize the euphemisms and the, you know, expressions and why. I don't even know the terminology in grammar, because I'm really messed up in the sense that I never stayed as a child. My parents moved me around, which I thank them for.
Yeah, that was the same thing with me.
So I never really kind of, everything's a little bit shaky in terms of grammatical foundations, as in, that was understatement, as in, I don't have it.
For me, it was always somewhat interesting to look at and listen to, actually, because they're really pretty sounding if you ever get the chance to listen to indigenous languages Central America and Southern Mexico. They're really pretty sounding, right? Like, they have, like,
really
beautiful words, right? But one of the things I learned, actually somewhat recently in my life, was that many of the words I thought were words made in Guatemala actually came from Nahuatl, which is southern Mexico.
Wow.
Because the Spanish conquered Mexico before they conquered Guatemala, and they used Mexican tribes to basically fight and conquest the rest of Guatemala. In the process, Guatemala got a lot of places actually changing names. Guatemala is in Nahuatl. It means place of a lot of trees.
So it was kind of...
Yeah.
It was because of the interpreters.
Like, say, for example, and you can tell it automatically with language. For example, there is a beautiful lake called Atitlan. People, it's a famous lake. People, if you've been a tourist in Guatemala, you probably went there.
Oh, one day I'm going to, like, I'm gonna land with my family.
It's fun, man. It's fun.
I know.
The city by the lake is called, it's actually the original Guatemalan language, it's Panajachel. Mm-hmm. You can almost tell like the difference in language, right? Panajachel.
Yeah, right. It's a different...
And the other one is basically named the place Atitlan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very different sounding languages and stuff like that, but it's kind of like one of those. And now it's just a complete mix.
Phonemes.
It's a mess. Yeah, it's a mess all over the region in terms of like what is named what.
Right.
And especially like the more southern Mexico, Guatemala you get, the more like ethnic diversity you have.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is more, a wide variety of people there,
mm-hmm.
right? Like indigenous people.
And highly, right, isolated, so the surviving.
Yeah, I mean, like, languages spoken by, like, 500,000 people, you know, that you've never heard of.
Right.
there's a lot
of them, and they're disappearing at the rate of several per week or something.
Long live English, man. Yeah.
One could say, make the argument that's kind of a lingua franca, right? A language that everybody speaks, and therefore everybody, whatever our background, we can speak to each other in, is not a, you know, it's a practical thing. By the way, it will be, it already is, I'm sure, you know, it'll be unrecognized.
Yeah.
Like never before. The English language, more than other languages, it'll be, to some perhaps, contaminated, right? Because everybody's texting in it and the internet is still of course it gets translated, it has different languages, but still overwhelmingly in English and things like that will impact, as already today, more people use English as a second language than as a first language, or as a, you know, non-first language than people who speak English as a first language, way more already. In that sense, it is really an international language, but that will affect the language itself. The technology already is tremendously,
and it's better than code.
Yeah, right. You think, no, that could change, you know, expressions we can see. I mean, the non-grammatical expressions, I mean, memes, it's quite exciting, I think. It's silly, really, in a sense, to resist. I mean, we want to preserve different eras. But in a large sense, today, you know, in history and economic history, too, and everywhere in cultural history, our view of the past was very significantly distorted in the 19th century. Everything kind of reinterpreted in so many different, with so many different biases, hidden, though. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So we're just maybe in some sense only now beginning to burst a little bit through that. The postmodern critique, I think, in essence, is also helpful in those kind of things, just this kind of mechanism by which to undermine anything that claims that it is absolutely and always
so
true.
I have an economic history question that's been like bugging me today, because I've been chatting with a friend about it, that who's also an economist, and he basically and it's a challenge that a lot of Latin American countries are facing right now. And I wanted to bounce it off you, Benny, and see what you guys think here.
Okay.
Right? So there is kind of two strategies going on in terms of development, really. You know, like the big question is like what kind of like sectors in an economy do you want to like develop, right? You can develop an economy basically into three separate sectors. You can have like big agricultural economies. Then you have industry, and then you have services, right? And as you may expect, I set them in the order as you would expect developing countries to develop, right? First, most countries were agricultural. Then many of the now developed nations who now specialize in services at some point were industrial, right? They saw a different rates, of course, like say, for example, Germany, Britain took an entire century to industrialize. Russia took a decade, right?
Yeah.
So if you think about it,
that's significant cost.
In both cases.
Millions.
In both cases. Right?
The rapidity was very dramatic.
But in
both cases, that's true.
So here is where I'm coming from. Latin American countries right now are confronting this challenge, right? Because what they're arguing is, we would like to industrialize, we would like to develop and turn eventually into service economies, but all of the industries in which we try to succeed to industrialize and to produce manufacturers, we basically become out-competed by Asia.
And they're working within a very different context.
And they're working within a different context and stuff like that.
Specifically, the fact that, I mean, I know as a teacher of economics, I know that very well. You know, people are not aware that every single industrialized successful Western country, Britain, Germany, France, every single one. And later on, even South Korea, Japan, and other successful industrializing countries did it with very heavy government intervention in favor of its industry as opposed to protecting it from competition from abroad, in so much as at the time when there were other countries that that were, you know, would have been able to trade beneficially.
So do you think a country that wants to develop,
America in particular,
do you think you can skip that step nowadays? That's a big question, right? Like, can you go from zero to hero in no time? You know what I mean? Can you skip industrial development, given that first, now you don't have a lot of the inputs, meaning the cheap rates of labor you had in the 19th century, right? Yeah. And given that also industry nowadays is considered, I mean, like, half good, because it makes your GDP growth, but when you account for the natural degradation, it's kind of like a bad
environmental
too,
cost is the problem,
right? It's kind of like a not in my backyard type of deal. Mm-hmm. So what some people have been proposing is what happens if we switch straight to services, right? And how can we motivate services? And one of the arguments out there, and I'm aware of its flaws, but I'm just putting it out there just as a suggestion, is what if you incentivize tourism? Because although not a single economy has entirely survived, especially at the national level, from tourism. With tourism, first, the quality of jobs you create tend to be in the service sector, not industrial jobs. That implies that they tend to be, to some extent, higher quality jobs. Second, you don't have to invest as much as in infrastructure as if you were to invest more for manufacturing, right? And the infrastructure you develop usually comes accompanied by heavy investments in human capital, which you don't need when you engage in manufacturing. Because when you have manufacturing, the more obedient the worker, the better a worker he is. While in services, you also need the worker to have criteria, to be reasonable, to be able to negotiate, to be able to treat people right when they need to make the exception to the rule when that's necessary. And a worker like that needs investments.
And tourists don't want their, you know, cocktails served by, you know, a gaunt, you know, depressed child laborer.
Exactly. Like Samantha Bee says, right? Like, I like my milkshake tasting like tears of poverty, right? Like, no, you don't want that.
Yes,
most
of you. Yeah, but you see what I'm saying, right?
No, listen, stop it. You need to parse this. Like, this is a big question.
Can we skip it in Latin America?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, first of all, okay, so we know there's some catches for us, right? I mean, the rich world has suffered, has had a hard time with the adjustment, didn't work out as it was supposed to. Supposed to all these miners' children should have been computer programmers by now. That's what they told us back in the 70s, didn't they? So, you know, we should look at that as some kind of caution, right? How do you...
Yeah.
The context, of course, is so different. I mean, put on the side there for a second that before I forget it, I mean, who will manufacture then, in a sense, right? So are we concentrating these kind of pits of production? It's like a Batman movie a little bit now. You get the kind of... Right, there's certain places in the world that will not follow that model, but somebody's gonna have to produce the materials,
well,
right?
Somebody's already out competing us.
Look
that,
at China also in terms of
their, right?
But they have to breathe too. They're gonna have to do something
at some
dramatic.
Point, right? At some point,
you know, I mean, really, I mean, what, right? Or a mass investment? I mean, maybe. I mean, they're already, but just not enough. But okay, that's another question. But what I find interesting is, generally, tourism, of course, is not an enriching industry. Much of the, actually, there's a lot of the value added can and is often moved out of the place, right?
So, well, but look at Orlando.
It's a little like raw material.
Look at Orlando.
Well, precisely. Wages.
Look at how much development occurred in Orlando in the past 45 years.
Maybe as a trigger, you know what I'm saying? I mean,
you see what
in
I'm
the
saying?
Long run.
Right.
It's not entirely out there, what I'm saying.
But the impact is low, relatively low.
And Orlando did not develop on a huge manufacturing industry, did not develop in extracting fuel and ores. You know what I mean?
You need to convert. But
they expanded on slave labor.
You need to convert at least out of it eventually if you want to get continued.
Low wages and catering to Disney, Marriott.
Though again, the context, so, you know, underdeveloped countries in Latin America are in a situation, and many all over the world are also, not only are they in a situation of poverty right now, and deep poverty, they have, agriculture, it depends, right? A lot of their agriculture is very sick, and much of it is because of the way, well, let's cut to the chase, because of the way international trade has become really just like, colonialism by indirect yet more efficient ways. So that's another one of those core world problems, you know, that it's not like, how do we help the poor countries? I mean, let's stop impoverishing them actively, because we are right now.
Yeah.
And we is very broadly here, basically all the rich countries, all of them are in it without exception. So there's that. So what I'm thinking, I mean, that's an interesting idea. It stands a chance. If it is done, right? Like how is it going? The devil in the detail thing that always, how exactly do you do it? Tourism generally impoverishes countries, you know? It's true what the Jamaicans, Michael Manley in the 60s in Jamaica was right, and many other leaders, democratic leaders of the third world, many of whom were killed or eliminated one way or another. I'm just wondering,
hey, do you know any places? And here is another thing I wonder, like, do you know success stories about tourism? Because I know plenty of failure stories about tourism. You know,
I mean, you have to have access
trying
to
motivate tourism, right? Like, say, Belize is a perfect example of how I think not to go about it, although their tourism industry is relatively vibrant, but I think it doesn't support a country.
A good example of the failure is in Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico is a huge failure. In tourism?
Yeah.
So the very big picture, though, is that, you know, you can have an idea and we can argue about its merit, but when you talk about real world economics, not at the stay at the blackboard all your life and never come back, you know, to the actually, what are we going to do then with this?
Yeah.
It gets really tricky, right? Because how you do it, the detail, it's so easy to hijack these ideas, to use them like we in the political realm, to go back to where we started, right? Where you can say these slogans completely empty.
So my point is also like, wait, if really tourism has so many failure cases, we're stuck in square one back again, because then the other alternative is all manufacturing as usual.
Well, how about the old radicals, right? Precisely those that got shot or a case of Manley, actually Michael Manley wasn't, he just, you know, pushed aside, in Haiti, that a lot of people, Many good liberals forget, you know, how Clinton was also highly made sure that the Democratic representative in Haiti is never allowed into the country, or only after we put a puppet government, which just collapsed again. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about why the Haitians can't get their act together, maybe because, you know, the CIA is there every 2 weeks kidnapping the prime minister. Not every 2 weeks, every 10 years, you know, kidnapping the prime minister.
Like,
yeah?
Puerto Rico has like a GDP per capita of 19,000. GDP per capita is the average income a person makes in a year in a country, right? Mm-hmm. It's the closest thing economies have to measures of income that kind of works. It has a bunch of problems in it, but whatever. Puerto Rico has like 19,000, Bahamas has like 20,000. Similar regions, similar geography. Haiti has 400 and around 91, I think, last time I checked.
Yeah, well, they're eating, you know, the country that gave the world the, you know, sugar, not voluntarily, and, you know, and it was, you know, the whole rice economy of the, you know, Central America and the Caribbeans. I mean, it's actively destroyed. You know, when Bill Clinton goes to quote unquote air quotes right radio audience, help Haiti, you know, he sets up sweatshops. And brings, you know, Monsanto and their ilk, you know, over there to make sure that they don't grow any food on which they're, you know, but instead they buy genetically modified, bleached industrial rice from the Midwest, which is bad for the Midwest too, by the way. Just wanted to point out that they are the ones growing this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, so are we trying?
So do you have that type of development with manufacturer and multinationals?
Yes.
Or what do you do if you want to break away from that?
Because foreign direct investment has been a complete failure.
FDI is over and over, is incredibly studying development economics, right? And what you see is that although it might generate jobs, first, the quality of jobs it generates are not great jobs,
right?
Part-time. But more important than that is the type of jobs that first do not offer the worker a career. And do not offer the worker a way of improving himself.
Right.
Which I think that's kind of the dreadful aspects of industry and industrialization, right? Is the whole alienation part that Marx would be like turning in his grave right now. That when you think of services, you don't have that alienating factor as heavy, wow. You know, and you create better quality jobs.
It's the same Jay as me. Are you talking about the service
true. It's not necessarily true yeah. with all types right, of services, true. Right? And there are exceptions as in any. Yeah. But if you compare industrial work with services work, you can find in the services sector, like, way by far, like, a lot of more different types of jobs, not only that are not that alienating, but also that allow the worker to improve its skills over time.
Yeah, you know.
And to not get, like, mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I'm saying, like, is it a rule that Latin American countries need to attract foreign direct investment, need to open themselves up to whatever multinationals want to do just in the name of foreign direct investment and industrialization? Or can we just skip that step altogether and go straight
we
into
can't escape,
you know what, a good, accountable
government.
I think that unless the people of that country are very vigilant, it will fail. Latin American countries that want to invite, you know, be more open about their markets and all that so they can progress.
No, on the contrary.
On the contrary.
It has to be done internally.
Yeah.
Whenever, basically, the experience of the, you know, the global 99, to go back to the language of Occupy, right? The foreign investment don't help. I mean, right. It seems to help, but they end up hurting.
That's what I'm saying, because I look at tourism as pretty much foreign income.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit.
Because it's done wrong. So it's done wrong. That's the thing. Right. That's what I was trying to get. Exactly.
I think it's a bit different. It's not necessarily foreign direct investment. Tourism is. Tourism also can involve local institutions.
Industry too.
It can, but you know, in the case of Puerto Rico,
an idea.
Most of the tourism there is owned by outsiders.
Right, of course. Mm-hmm. Everywhere in the poor world, that's the problem.
Not only that, but what's also happened is that they've manipulated the laws in a way that they've gotten enough tax favors or incentives where they pay either barely or no taxes. So. Mm-hmm. The island's not getting all that money either. And what's happened is that, you know, as the bills keep flooding in, they've done the Trump bankruptcy, you know, gets bankrupt. And then the land itself where the hotel is at, it's basically auctioned off to some multi-billionaire who just buys it off, puts a fence, and boom, there you go.
Hmm.
So and that's what's happening in Puerto Rico right now. And that's one of the small problems that they have besides the debt that they have.
Everywhere. No, that's why, I mean, you know, that's why I bulked.
Similar to Cancun,
but
no?
Everywhere. I mean, frankly, sadly, you know, ecotourism and all the feel good about yourself tourism, scratch the surface.
Right.
With rare exception, it's all BS too. You know, it's not helping anybody. It's hurting just, and the profits stay in this time, I don't know, you know, in a slightly different office, differently decorated office, you know.
Yeah.
But it's, what's intriguing is precisely that, right? The tourism is supposed to be a no-no, right? It's really, it doesn't develop the country at all. It's an extension of old colonial practices, right? Extract the labor, extract the natural. It's like natural resources, I view tourism, you know? It's like, it's beautiful. Beautiful beaches. That's the natural resource you're selling here. Just like, you know, Saudi Arabia sells oil. Jamaica, just because I started with Jamaica, right? Sells
but
beautiful beaches.
But at least the natural resource stays there.
Well, to a point, though. As you know, one of the problems with
just saying, I mean, like,
these hotels, where do you think they put their trash?
Right? Yeah? What other type of investments could you get in?
Right.
And the other type of investment is a type that instead of just showing you how pretty beaches are, they actually just
trash them completely.
Trash them completely and throw all sorts of... I'm not sure. I mean, like, when you're looking at the balance of the two, it becomes highly questionable for me that the best bet for a lot of these Latin American countries is to through the textile, through the manufacturing.
But that would be a fake deal, you know, unless you have a good, you know, it depends. It's predicated completely on having a relatively good, well-functioning, accountable, non-corrupt government.
Institutions, right?
Yeah, you know.
I remember, now that you mentioned that, I remember...
Same problem we all have in America, too, and Americans know it. That's the good
Donald
news.
Trump
that's
knows
the good
it.
News.
Donald Trump
is exploiting it, maybe, you know? And it's... But the important thing is not him. It's not even Bernie Sanders. What's important is that the American people... public is no longer, you know, being fully duped. It's you know, one, it's a long battle, you know, one battle won maybe, you know, and this election, it's too early, you know, for real change.
That is real true. Too I early. Feel like a lot of people are just throwing the towel about the results in this election already.
Well, yeah.
And it's so early yet. It's like months and months for it to come.
Well, again, I hope maybe we'll have independent candidates. That could get then interesting. I mean, I again, for Sanders, I'm like, do it already. I mean, I guess maybe he needs to wait a little bit just before.
I also think that at some point there might be, I mean, I don't know, but like it has always seemed to me, and I think it was after New Hampshire that Bernie came out talking and Hillary came out talking, and I had the sentiment that whomever runs from their side, the other one will go as vice president. And I was wondering, is that even possible to do in this country? Like, say, for example, could Bernie Sanders be Hillary Clinton's vice president?
Yeah, of course, yeah. It's been done before.
So I mean, again, it wouldn't surprise me that something happened.
Maybe.
Like
I'll be disappointed. I mean, won't be totally. I'll be a little disappointed. I think, again, it has less. It will have less of an impact on the discourse. On, you know, the problem is that we have to have, the American people need to get back their voice, right? And they need to have influence on policy. Right, via a functioning political system, especially in these trying times when we're going to have to make some really big decisions. The environment is changing, you know. And when I say environment, it's not just the climate change; it's everything. You know, the way the world is.
But,
right,
but, you
we
know,
have to respond.
Even though I don't know, we favor something like that for the sake of improving things around here. Thing is, you also have to consider how much Bernie is going to play ball with Hillary. Is he going to go in there if he was vice president? Is he going to challenge her on her?
No, I just kind of got that impression from listening to their debates at the end of in New Hampshire.
Well, like, it seems like they're going in that direction.
You know what I mean?
They're more kind of like doing a kumbaya type thing.
Wow.
Because
that's the worst case scenario,
right,
in my book.
They understand that the American public is already burnt out with what's going on with the Republican Party. You know, so they want to hear somebody apologizing somewhere or somebody saying something good about the other person.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
No,
really.
No,
yeah.
Right. No. Yeah. Remember what I was saying about language. It's symbolic. It's like really, it's like a science. They're like, oh, we need to add two of this type of emotion. Okay. Now send it to the team that will create the message.
Right.
To deliver these, you know,
units
of emotional response, you know? Oh, man. No. Yeah. Right. Exactly. You should look at it as this kind of theater that it is.
So,
is it what, the top of the hour? I don't even
top
know
of the hour.
Is. Okay, let's do that.
Time flies.
Let's do that.
Please, a bronze column.